You are listening to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, episode number 5. Today, we're talking about an empowering approach to preventing living with diabetes and Alzheimer's diseases. Hey everybody, Astrid here. Welcome to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast is produced twice a month for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at www.healyounaturally.com/podcast. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at @heal_naturally and Facebook at healyounaturally.com and on Instagram at Heal Your Natural. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hey everyone, today I have a great guest. She's been here with us before, and her name is Dr. Theresa Nicasio, also known as the Inclusive Chef. She's a registered psychologist for over 29 years, author and gourmet raw food chef, and an integrative mind-body wellness expert since 1987. Dr. Theresa has won international awards and accolades. Her best-selling book, Yum! Plant-Based Recipes for a Gluten-Free Diet, has won the 2015 Gourmet and World Cookbook Award as the best diet book in Canada for public and recently won the Best in the World Cookbook Award winner in China. Theresa also contributes to public awareness through her blog yumfoodforliving.com, social media, and her articles have been featured in some of the most prestigious wellness websites, magazine articles, and other media outlets. Welcome, Theresa, to today's podcast.
Thank you so much, Astrid. I'm really excited to be here today.
Awesome. Great to have you. So, guys, today we're going to talk about diabetes. We're going to talk about prevention, how to treat, how to heal diabetes naturally and potentially reverse it. Theresa, we recently watched a video by Dr. Perlmutter and Melissa Schellen, and they were talking about the connection between diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. And you actually tagged me and other wellness bloggers and other professionals. And we were actually very, not shocked because we already knew about it, but it is just, the research is just there. We decided to do a podcast on this because it is something that touches our hearts deeply. Theresa has, had family members who dealt with diabetes and complications, and I myself, this is a very, you know, delicate topic because I lost my father to severe diabetes complications last year. So I think this is going to be very important. And a lot of you who have family members with diabetes, currently dealing with diabetes complications, and potentially dealing with diabetes right now. So Theresa, let's talk about diabetes prevention and everything else we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I was so excited. I love Dr. Perlmutter. He has been doing amazing things with empowering the public, informing us about elements from the research around diet, and he's specifically a neurologist, so looking at the neurological implications of what we eat. And he was definitely a huge influence in my journey, and also was an inspiration in part for my book Yum. Mm-hmm. And when I was watching this video, which I thought it was quite funny and awesome that this Melissa Schilling is not a physician at all, but she's a very adept and respected researcher. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a lot of us that in the population who are doing a lot of research ourselves, who maybe have research training like I have as well. I'm not a researcher, but I've been trained as a psychologist and, you know, kind of the scientist practitioner model. And I really appreciate when there's solid, grounded research with information. Mm-hmm. And what Melissa did to start to basically connect the dots with some elements that have been hearing a lot of things about, I think is really worth us talking about.
Absolutely. And actually, I wanted to say that her research actually started because her grandmother passed away from Alzheimer's. And also one of her good friends, I believe, is currently dealing with MS. And so she said, I need to research. I need to do something about this. She's a you know, well-known, like I said, researcher. She's I think she was more into the getting companies, like top-notch companies to organized business and stuff like that. But anyway, going back to that, it was pretty compelling that she decided to read journals and do her own research, and they were questioning all of her research. And that happens to a lot of us. You know, I'm an independent holistic health researcher, and several times I've been questioned on, well, you're not a doctor. And we wanted to emphasize on that right now. I am not a doctor. I am a wellness blogger and an independent researcher. And Dr. Theresa Nicasio is a psychologist, and she's also the creator of her book, Yum, and other books. And we do research. You know, that's what we do. And also based on our experiences with our families. So what she did was, they were actually talking about it during the video that I'm going to post the link below in the podcast. She was saying on how they were feeding her grandmother in short all day long. And she said, it breaks my heart because I didn't know then that we were actually speeding up the process, you know, because in short is just sugar. It's all sugar. I refused for them to feed my grandmother, which passed of different, you know, diabetes complications too, and, you know, heart attack, stroke, and the same thing with my father when he was in the hospital and he was dealing with all these toes amputations, and it got pretty bad. I told him, I said, do not give him Ensure because that's pure sugar. Might as well inject him with sugar. And it was an uphill, you know, battle with doctors in the hospitals, but I did it. I said, oh, no, he's not eating that. And, you know, so anyway, going back to what you were saying regarding the video and all the compelling evidence, give us your input, Dr. Nicasio.
Yeah, so this connection with sugar, well, I take a step back, because the piece with the diabetes that we've been hearing about, the increasing incidence of diabetes in the population, the increasing obesity and diabetes in the childhood population of type 2, it's been raising more and more questions. And, you know, Mark Hyman did his book on the blood sugar solution, and he's really pointing out sugar is an issue. Sugar, not just sugar, but everything turns into sugar. Carbohydrates readily turn into sugar.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically everything turns into sugar, but all sugars are not created equal, and how our body metabolizes them is, you know, is, again, they're getting more and more information related to glycemic load and so forth. But this really is for sure a North American, epidemic.
Yes.
With just this past September, the Journal of American Medical Association came out with their report estimating that 49 to 52% of the U.S. population are either diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Wow.
This is serious business. And when they were talking about in this video about prediabetes, is basically insulinemia, which is an excess of insulin in the system. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have quote unquote prediabetes, and they think, well, at least I'm not diabetic, but they don't realize that it really is. It's part of the same picture here. And from this research, when they're talking about this hyperinsulinemia causing, being a factor in increasing plaques, Alzheimer's plaques in the brain. And because we're also seeing, just by coincidence or not, as a real increasing rise in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, and other sorts of dementia, neurodegenerative conditions. So this is part of the passion that's been a fire in my gut as I've been working on my book, where I decided to not only not use any regular cane sugar, but also create as many recipes as I could that had very low glycemic load.
Beautiful.
So anyway, I'm really appreciative of what they're doing, and we need to take this seriously.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And this is something also that comes to mind when I was watching the video. And actually, what I've been learning throughout the years is that according to the American Diabetes Association, if you have a morning fasting glucose of 126, you're already a diabetic, right? And so they believe that if you're 110, 116, you know, you're pre-diabetic, but you're still kind of safe. And now, the integrative medicine doctors and endocrinologists and, you know, such as Dr. Perlmutter and Dr. Hyman and Dr. Mercola, they actually, Dr. Mercola advises that our sugars, our morning fasting sugars should actually be around 90 or even less. And your A1C, he wants it at around 4 because he believes that if your A1C is over 5 or even 4, you're already there. He says once your numbers are 110, 114, you're pretty much there. It is only a matter of time. Now, for example, on my end, I test for prevention measures. And I test my morning sugars, you know, a few times a week. I, of course, test after meals and like that. And I am actually, both diabetes runs in my family. My parents, both my parents were diabetic. My grandmother was a diabetic. Because of my experience when testing, I know for a fact that I'm predisposed. I see how sometimes I test my, depending on what we ate the night before with a friend or my husband, and I may have not had the carbs the night before or a particular meal, and they did. And I go and test my sugars, and soon enough, mine are slightly higher. So I'm talking about 100, 103, you know, and I'm scared, and I walk, I exercise, I watch my diet, but I am predisposed, you know. I also have a little bit of issues with my weight and things like that, but I am proactive. So that's something that I also wanted to talk about, and I am sure you, Dr. Nicasio, agree that prevention and being proactive is key in of course treating and preventing diabetes.
Yeah, I'm really glad you bring that up, Astrid, because it's an interesting double-edged sword, because we can have all this information, and we do, and more people are realizing that there's problems, and more people like you and myself have family members, and we ourselves are predisposed. But then what happens, and this is where I'm really excited to be able to bring to the table my skills and knowledge as a psychologist. Because that's what's been left out. Because we can know what's right. We can have an idea about what the best things to eat, what the best things to do. We have New Year's resolutions that, you know, how many millions of New Year's resolutions go on every year that are not only not achieved, perhaps the goals weren't even really achievable, but
that's
realistic.
True. But we start off, that's so true, you start off like clean slate, first 2 weeks, everyone's going to the gyms are packed, the produce area is clean, but. Mm-hmm.
So the best laid plans don't necessarily get enacted, and that's where I feel like my greatest influence and my greatest input can be is, first of all, acknowledging our human nature and then finding ways to move beyond the idealistic notions about what we believe we should be doing and instead change the paradigm to kind of more of a visionary paradigm of what it is we long for, what it is we want to create in our life, but from a very compassionate place of acceptance and understanding. Uh-huh. And so when you were talking about your experience just now, there's an emotional experience you have every time you get that little pinprick and get the little piece of blood on the meter and feeling what the fear, and then when you see the numbers not being what you would want them to be, that can create despair. That can create depression. That can create anxiety. It can create a whole lot of other psychological problems that then overlay whatever the physiological problems are that actually may predispose us to being less likely to be able to follow through with our best laid plans.
Wow. You are 100% right. That is so true. When you test, yes, that is exactly right. And my mom always talks about it, and she gets, you know, and that's another thing, when you're going to go to the doctor and they're going to test you, your blood pressure goes up automatically, your stress level goes up knowing that they're going to test you and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So that's all, that is so true. There is that whole psychological, mm-hmm. you know, issue involved. Mm-hmm.
And then once, you know, kind of once maybe doing something, it's like I've already eaten this or I've already drank that, that all caution gets thrown to the wind. It's like, you know, I've already messed up, so what the heck? And so then there can be more binging that occurs because of already that sense of futility and failure. And so that's why I'm trying to propose a middle ground. Not that middle ground is for everyone, because I really believe that the work that Dr. Perlmutter and Dr. Hyman are doing is outrageously awesome, and it is saving people's lives, and it's really wonderful. I'm really wanting to capture people who maybe aspire to following those sorts of plans, but really are having a hard time doing that, and or even people who are wanting to aspire to it, and they just want more recipes that are congruent with Dr. Perlmutter and Dr. Hyman's plan. Mm-hmm. But I'm also wanting to capture a place that's kind of a middle ground where people can still feel that they can enjoy those comfort foods, those foods that have emotional associations mm-hmm. with pleasure, with decadence, with all those things that when utilizing the standard food that we have for particularly treats or pastas, that it just spikes their blood sugar and it harms them. So that's what I've tried to do with Yum, is creating a lot of not just those recipes that are really purist and ultra healthy from a low glycemic perspective, but also creating others that maybe are not as optimal in that sense, but are lower glycemic options for those delicious treats that people are going to eat anyway. So why not do it in a way that's not going to hurt them or hurt them so much?
Absolutely. And actually, that brings me to one of the questions. With the pasta and all the carbs and all that, we, at this point, a lot of us know, and for you guys, for those of you that still don't know, like Dr. Nicasio mentioned before, carbs pretty much turn into sugar, all of them. You know, and so you need to make wise choices in terms of glycemic load and glycemic index. A lot of my, the few recipes that I have, because I don't have a ton of them, do focus on low glycemic load and things like that. But that is something that I constantly get asked, what do I eat instead of pasta? And, you know, we talk about the spiralized vegetables, but some people can't stand them. Other people, we talk about gluten-free pasta, but gluten-free pasta, actually, I am not a fan of gluten-free pasta, because gluten-free pasta has a very, very high glycemic load, because it's usually made of rice, you know, sometimes quinoa, and a combination of grains, and it's still not a good deal for diet, for people trying to go in a low, you know, glycemic diet. So what is your recommendation for some of those, you know, meals that people want to indulge in, but that are low glycemic? And of course, they got to refer to your book.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you point out, many, many of the quote unquote gluten-free foods are full of really high in starch and grains. Now, some grains are going to be higher glycemic than others, because those with a higher protein and higher fat content are going to have a lower glycemic load, obviously, than those with the lower protein and are just kind of empty starches. Right. But I've actually devoted in the front of the book, before I even get into the recipes, tens of pages of discussion about alternative foods. And you mentioned a couple of them, but the actuality is there are actually way more quote-unquote gluten-free pastas that may or may not even be called gluten-free pastas, mm-hmm. but one of my favorites, which does have a, every fruit and vegetable is a carbohydrate. So when we're talking about the carbohydrate load, we're talking about those more empty carbohydrates. But one that's on a more controversial place is, you know, beans and legumes. because they're very high in protein, and the glycemic load for those tends to be a safer food for people with diabetes or blood sugar regulation. Mm-hmm. But so one of my favorite kinds of pasta, which many people don't really know about, are these bean and legume pastas, which the only ingredient, for example, is mung beans.
Oh, wow.
That's it. Or black beans, or adzuki beans, or lentils. And when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, boy, that's going to probably taste like beans. I'm not sure.
Yes.
And we have been so blown away in our family. Not only do they taste fantastic and actually don't even carry that heavy bean flavor, but they also have an incredible texture. And some of them better than others. I mean, the mung bean pasta texture is indistinguishable from regular pasta. And yeah, I'm Italian, Astrid, so I'm pretty picky about my pasta.
Right, yep.
And so that's one that's an amazing option. But then there's even other options. Some may work better for people than others. There's some that are made with sea kelp. Now, the sea kelp ones for me, and I'm not sure why, but I have some sort of food sensitivity to those. And those, the texture is more, they're more rubbery, but it's another amazing alternative. But you do have to wash them, like the, you know, bajubis, because they have a bit of a stinky smell. But then once you get them really washed and they're in with the pasta sauce, then you actually, it's fantastic. It's still really good, but I do have a reaction to it. But I think that's like zero calories, zero glycemic. It's free food. And there's another that it's called Shirazaki. Get these things all confused.
It's like a Japanese noodle type of thing.
Yes, yes. Now there's two bases though. There's some that are made from a soy base. And then there's some that are made from a root, like a yam root. And sometimes it's hard to find the ones with the yam root, but I prefer that just because I don't like to overdo my soy intake. And again, those have, I think, like zero. They're like a free food, and those, again, you need to rinse, because straight up out of the bag, the smell is not that attractive. But once you rinse it and then you put with the pasta sauce, it's got an amazing – the texture is just like pasta, and it's an alternative where you can still – really indulge in that. And pasta sauces can be, if you're not throwing in Italian sausage or that, but you're making just a beautiful Italian, say a red sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With say, a lot of onion and garlic and rosemary and thyme and oregano, and just making a beautiful pasta sauce and tomatoes. You've got a pretty darn healthy dish there, and you can eat as much as you want really, and not have any blood sugar spiking.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. I have seen those at the store, Whole Foods and like that. I never ventured into the, is it this, I think it's the shirataki noodles that we're talking about?
Yeah, shirataki. Thank you.
There you go. And I just actually looked it up, so don't you believe that I just knew it on the top of my head. So shirataki, and also there is, what are the other ones that you were talking about? The bean ones. I have seen it, but never tried it. I just try to do a lot of the zucchini noodles and like that, but occasionally my family still has a little bit of issues with regular pasta versus zucchini. So I do zucchini, they do regular. But, you know, in essence, we want our entire family to start, you know, going back to basics. You know, it was always pasta, but now we all know that it's not really the greatest choice. So, guys, now you know, shirataki noodles, also bean-based pasta, you know, and legumes. And so those are wiser choices when it comes to glycemic index.
And I can almost guarantee you that if you make, without telling anybody, some of that mung bean or lentil pasta, that, by the way, has become mainstream. You can get it at Costco. You can get it on Amazon. It's super accessible, as well as a lot of these wonderful organic food co-ops and organizations that I like to buy things from. So, but it's really accessible and inexpensive at Costco. But if you get that, if you get the black bean, it'll raise eyebrows. People will wonder what's going on. But if you get one of these that look more like regular pasta and you make the pasta, they won't know. And I've had many people do that experiment with their family, and their family just loved it and they ate it up. The other thing you can do is if you're wanting to maybe reduce the amount. Maybe, you know, you're having a hard time getting access to some of these other pastas. Sometimes you can do like half and half, where you do some of the regular pasta, but then you throw in some of those spiralized zucchini, and just as a bonus, as part of, it's almost like part of the sauce, but it actually becomes part of the pasta texture if it's a spaghetti type. And so there's ways that you can then reduce, looking at, you know, again, the gray zone as opposed to black and white, all or nothing. You can reduce then the glycemic load by gradually adding a little bit of that in there.
Excellent. That is a fantastic choice. I think it's doable, you know, and no one will notice. Now, I wanted to talk about diabetes complications. We were actually talking about this last time and how to prevent them. You know, we were talking, we all know it, you know, neuropathy, which is really, really terrible. I thank God I haven't experienced it, and I hope I never do, but I've heard that diabetes neuropathy is just one of the most intense pains. There is also, of course, Alzheimer's. There is also gum disease, foot problems. And I actually want to talk about that, foot problems, a little later on, because there is actually ways to prevent, you know, toes, amputations, and all of this. There is actually a new movement which was created by a nurse in California who was tired of seeing how protocols or the way they were treating those wounds, it just wasn't working. So she decided to create like a new movement to prevent amputations and stuff like that. So why don't you tell me, Dr. Nicasio, or you tell us, what are some of the best ways to prevent diabetes complications in your experience?
Yeah, well, I think just what we're talking about, you know, prevention, the more we can eat a clean diet and reduce the load of food that isn't good for our body, then that reduces have an anti-inflammatory diet where we don't eat. We really try to avoid as much as we can, or reduce the sugars, the extra starchy carbs, and so forth. That's going to, first of all, prevent us from even getting to the place of having to ask these questions. But then also, if someone is living with the, you know, already has diabetes or pre-diabetes, it's the same thing. But what I'll add as a psychologist is the element of mindset. And it goes back to what I was saying before about that sense of futility, giving up. That breaks my heart, because people will be like, well, I've already got diabetes, so I can take my insulin. Don't worry about it. I can eat whatever I want. Mm-hmm. Or I'm taking my glyphosate and, you know, whatever it is. No, not glyphosate. You're taking my I'm really bad with names of things, but the
glucophan and all the
insulin. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All that good stuff. I can take my drugs to offset it. And I think shifting the mindset away from that, knowing that, yeah, of course, you've got to do what you've got to do, but that doesn't give us free rein to then eat whatever we want. So if we can choose to eat foods that we know honor our bodies, and getting the kind of exercise that our bodies need, that those are the best forms of prevention. And staying, kind of keeping our chin up and knowing that even if we mess up, you know, maybe there was a party and there was consumption of things that were not good for the body, instead of beating ourselves up, instead shift your focus to, okay, today's a new day. Take a breath, right? It's like that idea of the New Year's resolution. I'm not big on the New Year's resolutions. I say just focus on one breath at a time. You know, it's like the Alcoholics Anonymous concept of, you just take it one step at a time, and make each choice, each moment, what it is, and whatever choices and moments are past. So that mindset will help to keep that focus, because making changes then on the physiologic level oftentimes take more time than our current culture is tolerant So it's realizing that it's just one meal at a time. You may or may not notice any changes on that morning fasting glucose monitor. But after you do this for a month, 2 months, 5 months, a year, 2 years, over time, there's a cumulative positive effect that you're more likely to see.
Mm-hmm. That's 100% true. It's just like small steps lead to big changes. And like you said, you know, if you have a setback, don't just throw the towel and say, oh, well, that's it. And it's very important. I actually witnessed that. You know, sometimes my mom is insulin dependent at this point. And I also remember my dad, they couldn't control his sugars. In pretty much weeks before his final days, and they were just pumping him with insulin, and I said, it's got to be a medication, or, you know, I think he had an infection, and it just doesn't work that way. You know, we started changing his diet. They were also giving him, this is something that I have to mention, and I know that there's someone out there who works at a rehab that's potentially going to jump and say this is not true, but I personally witnessed it. My father went to rehab after they amputated his leg, and I could not believe the kind of food that they were feeding him.
Oh, yeah.
They were giving him macaroni and cheese, some kind of protein, fried chicken, I believe. They gave him a ton of carrots, and also they were giving him dessert and bread. So he said, I'm not eating the bread. And my dad was one of those people that he would say, I'm eating half the pasta, I'm not eating. He actually didn't overindulge. And he was not overweight either. So this is something that has to change. If there is someone out there, the director of a rehab, and I actually attempted to speak to the nutritionist, but of course it was impossible. I wanted to say, explain to me, how do you think his sugars are going to get lowered with this type of diet? They were coming at around 6 p.m. after dinner to give him a snack. And what was the snack? It was goldfish. It was Oreo cookies, all kinds of different cookies. And I said, no. And I told the girls, I'm like, you never bring him this stuff again. We would bring him fruits instead. And I was bringing him fermented drinks. And I was bringing him different things. But something has to change. Yeah, our food system is flawed.
It's crazy. And was he given Jell-O as well?
Yes.
It's like, yes, have you ever looked at the ingredients in those Jell-Os?
Yes, I have.
Oh, like, my holy goodness. Yeah. So this is, I use that as an example because that's like an example of something that I've done in my book. The strawberry, I've created a strawberry Jell-O recipe without adding any sugar.
No kidding.
No sugar. No. There's five cups of Jell-O or something that I create with strawberries. And strawberries, again, berries are fantastic in terms of fruits. They're even lower glycemic. They've got great fiber. The body loves them. I use some of this stuff called chicory root inulin that has some stevia in it. The product that I love is from New Roots Herbal called Stevia Sugar Spoonable. Not the same as regular stevia. It's very, very little stevia. But you could use whatever sweetener you want, but you don't even need that much. And then I use like a quarter teaspoon, I think, of molasses, of organic blackstrap molasses. And this Jell-O is to die for. It's so delicious, and it's because it's everything in my recipe book is vegan, even though I'm not vegan and I'm not a proponent of telling people to be vegan. I eat animal products as well, but I do eat mostly plant-based foods. I want to give people more options about plant-based options that they don't realize even exist. So with that, instead of gelatin, which is actually not necessarily a bad food for you, but it's not plant-based, I use the agar-agar, which is a sea vegetable, which acts like gelatin when it's prepared properly. So this Jell-O is fantastic. And if hospitals and homes and people start to, I guess the other piece with mindset is to choose to be curious and creative and kind of a wellness warrior in discovering new possibilities that are still delicious and you would never know aren't unhealthy for you, but they're super healthy and ultra low glycemic for you.
That is awesome. I cannot wait to try the recipe. And I was actually convinced. I didn't realize, the book, the Yum book, is plant-based, and I was thinking she must have used grass-fed gelatin. But so for those people who would want to venture into using grass-fed, for example, with me, because I know it's extremely healthy and, you know, it's loaded with all kinds of, you know, CLA and stuff, would I be able to use grass-fed gelatin powder, of course, for this recipe, for those people that perhaps want to try it?
I have no idea, but I encourage people to experiment because my daughter became vegan when she was 12, and so we were trying to honor her lifestyle choices and creating, and she's a big reason why this book even came about. So she was a great teacher in that, because I eat eggs. I can eat a lot of plant-based. Animal-based. I even eat some meat. I don't like to eat very much meat personally, but I can eat some. and for my body's needs, it's something that has been recommended to me by my functional medicine doctor. Mm-hmm. And so I have a minimal amount of that, but mostly I eat plant-based foods. But there are many people who have allergies as well to plant-based. So the book is not about telling you what to eat or what not to eat. It's giving ideas, and it's a starting point for creativity. So absolutely, I think you could totally experiment with your whatever gelatin that you use and with the grass-fed organic forms, and you could see the approximate amount of liquid the equivalent that's in there, and then how much of the gelatin you would use in relationship. And I don't see any reason why it wouldn't work out. The trick with using a gargar, there's many tricks actually, it's a bit of a tricky food ingredient to use because it is, you don't know how much to use before you don't want to be too rubbery.
I see.
But also because depending upon the fruit you use, different enzymes and acids, you have to use more or less. And so I like spoon feed people by giving the recipes with the exact amount. I use the agar-agar in the to die for delectable pumpkin pie and pumpkin pudding recipe.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Oh, my God. It's the best pumpkin pie you could ever have. And it's entirely vegan. It's there's no dairy. There's no eggs. There's no gluten. And it gives people options even if they can't eat or choose not to eat certain ingredients.
That is awesome. Guys, you have to check the book.
It's a must win. And I think you heard the exciting news that the book actually, Plant-Based Recipes for a Gluten-Free Diet, it actually is a Canadian champion of the Gourmand World Cookbook Award as the best diet book in all of Canada. Mm-hmm. And I just returned last week from China because it was a finalist for Best in the World, and it actually won a Best in the World award. There was 10,000, over 10,000 entrants and 209 countries. This book has actually won a Best in the World, Best Diet Book in the World award. So
wow.
I'm thrilled beyond comprehension.
Congratulations. I heard the good news, and this says a lot. You know, not every book makes it to the gourmands. And she actually just came back from China, won best book. Like, it doesn't get any better than this. So you definitely have to check it out. I'm going to put a link at the bottom so you could buy it and you could make all these recipes. And you don't have to deprive yourselves.
Exactly.
You have choices. And it doesn't have to be that you're focused on medication, medication, medication. I get a lot of people that tell me, I don't like medications. I hate medications, actually. I don't like that word, but that's what they say. And I say, it's okay. There are options as long as you're willing to make lifestyle changes. There's no magic pill. I'm telling you right now, if you make lifestyle changes, you could work. You know, your supplements, your lifestyle changes, and it's all going to work. Go ahead.
I just want to jump in there because when we say lifestyle changes also, that can for many people feel like a should and feel like yet another New Year's resolution. And I just want to say, this is going back to mindset, is shifting our thinking about what lifestyle changes mean. I'd like people to think about the lifestyle change to be actually to embrace more pleasure, to have more fun, and to experience more of life and what's possible as the lifestyle change, as opposed to it being the idea of pushing through, white knuckling a different way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, if we can enter into that place of deliciousness, it's kind of like traveling, where you go, you experience different new things. And we talked about the shirataki noodles, and you hadn't experienced that. Now you might go to the store and actually buy, they're not cheap, but you might buy a bag and bring it home, and your world will start to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that part is like ultra fun. So lifestyle changes does not have to be a slog. It actually can be something that you can be like a child in a playground.
That kind of story.
Yeah.
In a playground, that's definitely better. Yeah, you know, it's all about making better choices and that are eventually going to help you, you know, in the long run. Now, I wanted to talk about something. I recently, going back to the Alzheimer's and diabetes connection, there is an article on my website that I shared. There was two studies that said drugs continue to fail where coconut oil shines. And there were two drug trials that failed. And they were saying on how two biological therapies designed to improve the clearance of sticky plaques from the brains of those with Alzheimer's disease failed to slow the steady loss of cognitive function in patients with mild to moderate forms of the degenerative disorder. So it has been proven that actually that coconut oil actually works in helping reverse early stages of Alzheimer's disease versus the drugs. You know, however, there was one case of a woman with end-stage Alzheimer's who saw great improvements within a week after starting coconut oil. So Alzheimer's disease, and correct me if I'm wrong, has been actually labeled type 3 diabetes. And, you know, it has to do with an insulin resistance problem. So coconut oil makes a lot of sense, as does the ketogenic diet, the ketogenic high fat diet. And coconut oil is known as a rich source of ketone energy, supplying an alternate form of energy to the brain. We know that in patients with Alzheimer's disease, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Nicasio, the brain is no longer able to, brain cells to absorb sugar. And so that's where the whole problem starts. And when they start consuming coconut oil replaces that lack of food for brain cells, and it starts to feed the brain. So do you have any experience with that? And they talk about in that study on how important it is to adapt a ketogenic diet, which is basically no carbs and more healthy fat and protein.
Well, I'm going to be a troublemaker here, because I don't like to be a proponent of any particular diet.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is really about helping people change how they think about their bodies and possibilities, and really working with their healthcare professionals with, applying whatever the research is and to given what their unique body's needs are, to apply those. So I'm not actually familiar with all the research you were just describing, although I certainly, there's been a huge buzz about coconut oil, and I love to use coconut oil, and I'm a big fan of fats, healthy fats, avocado, coconut oil, unprocessed and unheated. flax oil and chia and hemp and olive oil. So I'm a huge fan of the healthy fats. And I've even been part of two fresh cadaver dissections of human, people who had recently died. Mm. And one of my places of particular interest was the brain. But unfortunately, when you're working with an unpreserved cadaver, the brain is really, you can't really take it out of the cranium very easily. Mm-hmm. Really looking at it. But I did my best.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to tell you, you hear about it, but seeing it and feeling it, of course, with gloved hands and a nice lab coat, the brain is literally like a super high-fat tofu.
Yep.
Super fatty. And even trying to cut through it, it's like cutting through a melting butter. And so this is what the body needs, and what form that looks, and the details about the research. And I'm still a newbie, and again, not a physician. I'm not even a dietitian. I am a raw food nutrition educator and a raw food chef, but I'm not. I do not have the credentials with the other things. But I am very curious about what's coming up, and there's a lot of things that Dr. Perlmutter has been talking about, Dr. Hyman has been talking about, Dr. Amy Myers has been talking about, Dr. The Eat Dirt author, I forget his name.
Dr. Axe.
Dr. Axe, Josh Axe. Mm-hmm. There's some amazing, beautiful people who are important leaders in talking about some of these things. And so I'm following it, but I'm very careful not to be a proponent of anything. I'm not a proponent of a vegan diet. I'm not a proponent of a paleo diet. I'm not a proponent of a vegetarian, of a ketogenic. I'm not going to say do anything. I'm going to say listen to your body, work with your healthcare professionals, and then when you figure out what your body needs, find the most gracious, gentle, life-giving and fun way to meet your nutritional and lifestyle needs so that it doesn't become a form of torture, but actually becomes a form of opportunity and excitement and passion.
Absolutely. I agree. I am actually not one to follow a particular diet either, because I actually share the same philosophy, whatever works for you and your particular condition. But in this case, they are focusing on a particular diet just for the patient, the Alzheimer's patient, to see how it works out. And so that's, like you said, this is what the research demonstrates. And also, they also talk about how the brain is being starved of cholesterol, in Alzheimer's patients. So coconut oil provides benefits by increasing HDL cholesterol levels, which is also very important.
Cholesterol is not evil in and of itself. It's mm-hmm. particularly good cholesterol. It's not evil. And even the quote unquote bad cholesterol has physiologic functions that, having some of that is a good thing. It's just a matter of balance and what your body is needing.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Nicasio, I think this basically is going to wrap it up. And is there anything else you would like to add that our listeners would like to listen and learn, in terms of Alzheimer's, a little bit of the plant-based diet and how this all benefits us and our children, our families? We are trying to raise awareness in terms of what your options are and how you can prevent neurodegenerative diseases with, I know that lifestyle changes sounds like a New Year's resolution, but with, let's say, making small changes that lead to big outcomes.
Yeah, one change at a time. I guess what I would just say is kind of like what Josh asked, eat dirt, play in the dirt, play in the mud, mm-hmm. Have fun, bring our children and ourselves back connected to the earth, to the plants. They won't treat us wrong if we treat them well and eating clean. It's all beautiful. And have our kids beside us, teach our kids about about organic gardening, teach our kids about cooking. And that's why I've made all the recipes super easy and easy enough for kids to make. So it's not just for adults. And I will say that there is something else that's not specifically related, but I want to throw in because it's so exciting, is that if you do have special diets, and even if you don't, but you want to go on a really wonderful adventure, because traveling is the other piece that a lot of times people throw all caution to the wind, go on, say, cruises, and then end up, 10, 15 pounds heavier and feeling really bad, that there is a fantastic organization called, Journeys with Heart, Journeys, plural, with heart.com, and they're organizing a riverboat tour in Europe that people with any diet, they will accommodate anybody's special diet, and that all of the food that's going to be on board will be gluten-free, celiac-friendly. But if someone is vegetarian, vegan, egg-free, nut-free, whatever, they will create special diets based on whatever your unique needs are. And that's going to be happening in June of 2017 to July, 11-day experience from Prague to Budapest along the Danube. So I want to share that with you because I'm excited about it, and they've asked that I be the host on the cruise. So if anybody goes, any of you listeners go, I can meet you in person, which would be really fun. And you can still then travel and not hurt your body as well. So that's kind of a side note, but I really want to share that.
Oh, totally. I will definitely put a link to that. I think there's a group in Facebook. I'm sorry, an event on your page. So I will definitely put a link to that. And for those of you who are interested, if you're planning a cruise, I think this should be it, because you will not have to worry about your diet, your health. It's all safe. It's all healthy food. It's a healthy environment. It's a lot of fun. So definitely look into that.
I should just also mention that it is a fundraiser, so the proceeds are going to go to a good cause, the Canadian Celiac Association. So that's even better when it's for a charity
A charity, that's even better. So definitely. Well, Dr. Nicasio, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure having you as usual, and I hope we will see you here again soon.
I'm sure we will. This was fun, Astrid. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Have a great day.
You too.